Welcome to the Unpolished MBA. I'm your host, Monique Mills. Many times entrepreneurs are called unpolished because they are scrappy and do things in unconventional ways. Well, I like the name Unpolished MBA so much that I even trademarked it. So on this podcast, we commend those with practical experience because they've proven time and time again that one can be successful in business even if they don't have a formal MBA degree. So on each episode, we discuss topics related to business and entrepreneurship, and I've been told that my guests and I provide insights and inspiration to aspiring and current entrepreneurs alike. So this is the place where you can come and hear real life stories that can help you navigate both challenges and opportunities in business. Now let's jump into the next episode. So, hello, Unpolished MBA audience. Today, I have a special guest with me, Becky Darlin, and she is an SMB growth partner, but the most, I would say, one of the most interesting parts about her is, in addition to that, she's a CEO coach and hypnotherapist, and she's involved in M&A, and you guys know I'm all into the acquisition space. So, Becky and I are going to really dig in on business and hypnotherapy, and this is going to be such a fire episode. So, Becky, I want to welcome you to the podcast. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. I'm so excited for this conversation.
Yeah, me too. Which all stemmed from this post. You did a post on LinkedIn that said, it said this, rewiring your subconscious with hypnosis isn't about reducing the chaos. It's about increasing your ability to move calmly and confidently forward in the midst of that chaos. And I was like, I saw that and I said, tell me more. Tell me more, Becky, which leads us into this episode with you. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, in this episode, among other things, I do want to explore the depth of hypnosis as a tool for like mental resilience and success in business. So first of all, I want you to elaborate on what you were really saying about hypnotherapy in that post. But secondly, the relationship to success in business and, you know, how the two can relate to more success.
Yeah, absolutely. So especially in the world of entrepreneurship through acquisition or M&A, I mean, in entrepreneurship in general, but especially in this part of that entrepreneurship overall big thing is there's a bunch of chaos. There's a bunch of variables that you can't control, right? You don't know what's going to come back from the seller. You don't know what's going to come back through due diligence. You don't know if, you know, one of the partners was hiding something from you. You don't know what's going on. And even in the search phases, you don't know what business you're going after all the time. It's especially if you're doing like an industry agnostic search, there are so many variables that you cannot control. But the one thing that you can control is how you interact and respond to those variables, right? So a lot of times when people are going through a situation where they have to encounter the unknown or there are things that are outside of their control, it can feel overwhelming. They can get into that imposter syndrome mindset of, I don't know how I'm going to do this. Who was I? What was I thinking to even go after buying a business? I don't know if I can run this. I'm letting my family down by doing this. I'm crazy. All of these things can like stir in your head. But it's not necessarily that they're accurate. It's just that your body, both in mentally and physiologically, is responding to the stimulation of this is a new thing that I'm trying and it feels unsafe. So your reptilian brain goes, oh, this is unsafe. I'm going to die and I need to walk away from this. So we wind up sabotaging opportunities for ourselves.
All right, let's take a moment to thank the biggest sponsor of the Unpolished MBA. That's TPM Focus. TPM Focus is a strategy consulting firm that helps startups and small business owners generate revenue and find their way to profitability when they're launching a new product or in a new market. So reach out to tpmfocus.com. TPM stands for The Profit Matters Focus.com.
So, how did you know all this stuff? Is there special training around this? Like, how do you know all this stuff?
A lot of it is just growing up on my own journey. So I have a background where I'm, you know, both neurodivergent, and I went through a lot of trauma growing up. So my sensitivity to things not going as planned is very heightened. And so I went deep down the rabbit hole of why is my body responding this way when it's not a threat? Because when you're trying to build a business, you have to be good at overcoming obstacles. You have to be good at like sinking on your feet, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so I wanted to know how much of this is like trauma based and how much of this is stuff that I actually can control. And that got me down the neuroscience and psychology rabbit holes and, you know, learning how the different parts of the brain function, whether it's, you know, the reptilian brain or the midbrain or the neocortex, all of those respond to stimuli differently. And this is something actually that Orrin Claff talks about in his book on, I think it's like Pitch Anything, where he addresses like in order to get people to come to your side and to pay attention, you have to know which piece of their brain you're talking to.
What's the name of the book again you're referencing?
I believe it's Pitch Anything by Orrin Claff.
Okay. Okay. I'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah, it's great. And he's talking about how to go in. He was talking primarily about talking to like VC firms of how you go in and you make the presentation in order to secure the deal. But they've heard a billion pitches before. Mm-hmm. So most of them are tuning out unless you can get their attention. And we're kind of going down a little bit rabbit hole, a little bit of a rabbit hole here, but I promise we'll soak her back and it'll make sense. So what he said is you're presenting from a part of your brain that wants to give them, you know, all of the potential of what you're pitching. Their brains are listening from a what are the numbers on this? How is this a good investment place? So you have to find a way to speak to them that will bridge that gap. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So where that comes back to hypnosis is there's that same miscommunication that's going on between how you're being taught to pursue an entrepreneurship or a lot of the resources that are out there on entrepreneurship and your ability to implement them. And that gap is created primarily by the way that you perceive the events that are happening to you, like the meaning that you assign to those events.
Right. So as, let's use the VC example. I guess when you're trying to communicate with someone else to, I don't know, influence them in that kind of way, how do you know how they're thinking about things? Like, do you have to just make plenty of assumptions? And then you pitch or, you know, you communicate from that basis?
Kind of. So it's the age old like marketing and sales mantra. What's in it for them? Like, what is their motivation to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because if their motivation is to make more money, then you're going to be speaking to one part of their brain. If their motivation in doing this is, yeah, they want to make more money, but really it's more about like a strategic move, then you speak to them a different way. Does that make sense?
Yep. Totally. So unfortunately, I've experienced like on the sales side of things, right? So everything in entrepreneurship is sales. You have this assumption that a potential customer really wants, you know, problem A solved. And come to find out, they really just want affirmation that they're doing a good job running a business. You know, like, mm-hmm. It's like I brought my problem solving hat to this conversation. And, you know, so those sometimes the assumptions, this is B2B, right? Sometimes those assumptions, unfortunately, on my part, have been incorrect because you don't really know what state of mind folks are in. I'm sure I don't. I just don't know. Maybe some, you know, someone more skilled than I am does. But, you know, my assumptions have been wrong at times. And so it doesn't really end up the way I expected it.
It's actually a really common thing that a lot of people run into with their marketing and sales, because like you have this great idea for a business, or you buy this great business and you're like, I believe in the potential of this, and this is how I would communicate its value. And they don't get the feedback from customers to let them know really what their market is wanting. And so the way that you kind of can overcome a little bit of that or approach it is to assume that you know nothing about this and to get really curious and ask questions. Mm-hmm. Because 9 times out of 10, what they tell you is the reason that they want it or the reason that they don't want it is more like a security blanket. It's like when you go into a store and they're like, hey, can I help you with anything? And you go, no, I'm just browsing. Whether or not you're actually browsing, you're going to say that because you don't really trust that person. You don't really know that person. And they've kind of like interrupted what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
Versus when you go into a store and you're specifically looking for a thing, and then you walk up to an associate and you say, hey, I'm looking for XYZ. Can you tell me where I can find that? Mm-hmm. Right? That's a different conversation. So,
yeah.
But a lot of companies are more focused on how does my product help them? It's like an eye focus, mm-hmm. versus how is the customer helped by interacting with us?
Absolutely. That's a great point. You know, I see a lot of the startups and stuff I work with run into that when they're doing the customer discovery and they're so, you know, focused on getting their first few customers that mm-hmm. it's just the focus is on them versus the customer. And really listening. So that's a great point you made, Becky. I want to get into how the hypnotherapy relates to some of these challenges and, I don't know, misconceptions and burnout and all types of things, you know, how it can help, but how it's relevant to doing business.
Absolutely. So let's just continue with that example real quick. So like, especially with startups or somebody who just acquired a company, they're feeling the pressure of I've got to make these sales. The thing is that desperation translates into what they're communicating to both their staff and to the customers. Mm. And it's a turnoff.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's completely down to the owner's mindset of I have to make this work or I'm not going to survive. Right. So if we go back with hypnosis and we shift the owner's mindset to, I can find a way to make this work, even if it's not the one that I originally thought. Like if plan A fails, I know how to figure out plans B through Z.
Yeah.
Then the energy around the way that they're approaching it changes. It moves away from, I have to make this work regardless. Mm-hmm. And it turns into, I can make this work no matter what happens.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And so suddenly they're not laser focused on one solution that may or may not work. Mm-hmm. They're open to, I'm looking for a solution that works, whether or not it's the one that I fell in love with already.
Oh, wow. That's a good point, because it makes me even think about, especially in the acquisition space that you and I are involved in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was just telling you about one of the situations I was just in. You know, you can have, like, you can sabotage yourself by being, I guess, too focused on the way you would prefer to do it versus it getting done.
Mm-hmm.
How does someone like you help someone get through that? So we're talking about hypnotherapy. Do you hypnotize them before they're in those situations, during it, after it? You know, like, how does that work?
So it's a great question. I use a combination of approaches. So let's first bust a couple of myths about what hypnosis is in general, because like a lot of people, the examples of hypnosis are the ones that they've seen on popular TV, where it's you're getting very sleepy.
Right.
Like somebody like has been whispering in your ear and then they snap and all of a sudden you wake up and it's like Thursday and you have a cup of coffee and you don't know where you are.
Common misconceptions. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are great for the movies. That's not really how hypnosis works. So the basis of hypnosis is you kind of have three main pieces to how you process information. You've got your conscious brain, which is your thinking, judging, all of the things that you're aware of are in your conscious brain. And then you've got your subconscious mind, which is like the executor, it's the implementer. So it doesn't have a judging feature, it just does. So if you tell it, I'm the worst person in the world and I don't deserve success, it's going to go, yep, you don't deserve success because you're the worst person in the world. We're going to make sure that your behavior ensures that you don't have success because that's what you told us you are. Right.
Okay.
And a lot of people don't even realize that that is a thing. They're like, and so between those two is something called the critical faculty. It's like the gatekeeper between your conscious mind, which actually judges the information, and your subconscious mind, which just executes on the programming. And so what hypnosis does is it creates a very focused awareness that allows you to remove the conscious mind and the critical faculty of it and speak directly to those subconscious beliefs in order to get all of the like doubt and analysis over whether you can change out of the way so you can just make the change.
Wow, so that sounds powerful.
It's very powerful. And there are two ways that you can do hypnosis. You can do what's called direct hypnosis, which is kind of what people think of when they think of hypnosis, which is, you know, you're getting very sleepy, you're going down a set of stairs, deeper now, great. Like it's very like progressive kind of relaxation. There's a formal induction and you know that you're being hypnotized, which is something that we absolutely can do. But what I prefer to do, because I'm a coach as well, and it marries really well with the coaching process, is I use what's called conversational hypnosis, and I use my language very intentionally. So the way that I word the questions to you or the way that we talk about issues I'm speaking directly to your subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than saying, this is a very simplified example, but just the purposeful use of language. If you're having a problem, let's just say, you don't know why you can't raise your sales numbers this quarter, right? So if I say to you, why can't you raise your sales numbers this quarter? Which would be, it doesn't seem like a harmful question, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what that's doing is it's bringing the locus of your focus to why you can't
yep.
do it. And yep. so now your subconscious is like, she wants to know why she can't do this. Let me give her all of the reasons why she can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just shift that question to how could you meet your sales quotas for the next quarter? Now your locus of focus is on solving the problem, not reinforcing the problem.
Got it. So does the person know that that's what you're doing when you're coaching them?
100%. So this is something, there is a little bit of ethical gray area when it comes to some uses of conversational hypnosis, because obviously if you're using that kind of powerful language and the person doesn't know that you're using it, I personally don't think that that's ethical.
Okay.
But I say up front, like I use particular language patterns. You may not know when I'm using them, but the purpose of me using them is for your benefit.
How do people respond to that? Are they like, ooh?
They're usually really curious of like, how does that work? Mm-hmm. And so generally what I do, so I have the first thing that any client does with me is we go through a growth potential call. And what we do on that call is I'm simply asking questions. but I'm asking questions and they know that I'm asking questions in a particular way. But as I'm asking the questions, they begin to realize that the answers that they're looking for, they already have. They just didn't know how to access. So as they're going through this process, they see the power of what it is that I do before they ever sign up to work with me.
It sounds very similar to some of the techniques used in therapy.
It can be. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's different from therapy because I have no desire to dig into anybody's childhood or to dig into anybody's trauma. In fact, if you need to go do that, go talk to a licensed therapist. I'm not qualified to do that. But if you realize that you may or may not know why imposter syndrome keeps popping up for you, what I can do is that I can go and rewire the belief that you're not worthy of the success that you pursue, whether or not you've dealt with that trauma in a therapy setting. Like, that's something that you can do separately. But in the here and now, if you're having trouble showing up as a leader of your company because your mind is working against you, that is something that I can help fix and change your self-concept so that when you show up as a leader, you don't believe that you shouldn't be there. You believe that you are that leader, that confident leader, and that you absolutely deserve to be in the position that you're in because you genuinely care about your employees. You have done the work to build up the skill set that makes you capable of doing that. So it's more like a self-esteem or self-confidence boost that allows you to do the thing that you want to do but aren't able to do because you don't believe you can do it.
That really gets to the heart of that statement that there is power in words. Mm-hmm. There is power in speech because you're forcing people to verbalize what they can do. And then it's almost like it turns it brings whatever it is they're trying to do into fruition.
Yeah, but I'm going to change one of the, speaking of words, I'm going to change one of the words there. I'm giving them permission to acknowledge their greatness.
Oh.
Go right? ahead, because
that is.
Because a lot of times they want to believe that they're capable of this, but they've had a lot of external influence that has said, you're no good, you're not worth anything, you know, my dog could do it better than you. And they internalize this stuff into their subconscious. It's like stuff that they don't want to believe, but they do, right?
How do they know that they believe that, though? Because if you were to ask most people, they really haven't tapped into that subconscious and things that they're telling themselves. How do they know that that's what's being, you know, replayed over and over in the back of their mind?
So a lot of times they don't, but their language gives them away.
Ah, I see. So that's how you know. Okay.
Yeah. So when people talk about their problems, they will use certain words that tell you what the block is. Like if you know how to look for them, they'll tell you what the block is. It's kind of like a highly trained salesman that if they're giving you objections, you know that the objection isn't really that they have to talk to their spouse. It's just that they don't want to say no. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to take responsibility for saying no. So if you can see through, like understand what they're trying to communicate with you, which is a skill set that I worked like for years to develop. I know that when somebody says like, you know, I'm always getting in problems with my employees, like we're always having confrontations. I know because of both understanding people and business, I'm like, okay, there are a couple of things that could be going on here. One, you don't believe that you can lead with authority. So you try to lead with fear, which causes problems with you try to intimidate your employees, which causes problems. Two, you haven't made it clear what you expect of them in a way that they can take ownership of. So you've kind of made them dependent on you while resenting the fact that they're coming to you for every little thing. So that's a systems problem. We can fix that right there. It's just little things like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
where they're not really aware of what the problem is most of the time. But if I ask the right questions, they're like, oh, okay, that makes a lot of sense.
So what led you to exploring hypnosis as a tool for business success? And do you have any personal experience that solidified your belief in this approach?
Yeah. So exploring it for business success was when you get into the world of entrepreneurship. I don't know anybody who's gotten into entrepreneurship who hasn't eventually gotten put on the mindset game. Like it comes down to your mindset. It comes down to your mindset. But like with all the mindset work in the world and with all the affirmations in the world. In fact, let me just talk about affirmations real quick while we're here. People will tell you to like affirm things, but if your subconscious belief system is not aligned with what you're affirming, it actually sabotages your success because your subconscious is like, okay, but you're a liar because that's not what you told me to execute. So we're not going to do that.
Wow.
And so it winds up creating problems if you're affirming I'm a multimillionaire, I'm a multimillionaire, but your subconscious believes that you have to work hard or that money is the root of all evil or like any kind of these conflicting beliefs, your subconscious is always going to win. That's why self-sabotage comes into play. So they didn't teach that piece of it. And it was frustrating to me. So I'm like, why don't they teach that piece of it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it is that people don't really understand fully how the brain works. I think they're making a lot more progress in things like, you know, the Huberman lab and things where neuroscience has gotten more popular is bringing a lot more awareness to this. But it's like trying to make an engine run without understanding that you have to put gasoline in it and not diesel.
Right. So for those individuals that just seem to always have bad luck, let's put that in air quotes. How do you help them using these tactics without them feeling as if it's their fault that these bad things are happening to them?
Yeah, so it's not... What I love about hypnosis is, and the way that you can use it to change people's belief systems is it's usually reframing. So it's not so much accusing people of doing this. Like you have bad luck because you're focused on having bad luck all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like, okay, well, this is a cycle that keeps repeating. What's coming up for you around this cycle? Why do you think that this might be coming up for you around that cycle? Well, what if you did something different? Have you considered the possibility of approaching it this way? Well, let's try for like 2 weeks to approach this in a different manner and see what comes up around that. And usually just being open to the possibility that there's a different way to handle that particular problem winds up solving the problem and then their luck starts to change. But a lot of it is like, if you believe that you deserve bad things, that's where your focus is. So if we can shift that focus onto even if it's like in some extreme cases, even if it's, I believe I deserve bad things, but I also want to try doing it a different way to see if that's true or not, can usually create that change.
Have you seen?
A lot of them just need somebody to like, give them permission or tell them that it's possible for them to do it a different way.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen it not be helpful, right? Have you seen people do that and their quote unquote luck still doesn't turn around? They're still headed in the, you know, the wrong way.
No. That's the beauty of kind of the work that I do is if they're genuinely open to the possibility of something being different, it will work every single time because it's not based on any kind of magic. It is literally just harnessing the way that your body and your mind want to work.
I see. Interesting. Oh, that's so interesting. You really give people back their power.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's really powerful. So on your website, you mentioned the roller coaster nature of running a small business, right? So it's ups and downs, mm-hmm. ups and downs. So what in particular, what motivated you to apply all of your knowledge, especially when it comes to business and hypnotherapy, the way the brain works and all of that, to apply it to the business world, and especially as a coach?
Because I think that for me personally, that it may be a little bit selfish, but that's where I get the most satisfaction out of helping people, because I believe that businesses well run have a positive ripple effect on society as a whole, right?
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily an area that people look at impact that way in, but I think that they should. A lot of my background is marketing and sales. I was in marketing and sales for about a decade before I really started getting more into the coaching. But a lot of what I was helping my clients with was the coaching aspect of it, because what they really want to do in creating a business or in running a business is to make life better for people, whether it's by getting them the best egg carton that they need for their eggs, or by, you know, doing some huge eco-friendly type of thing that like really makes an impact on the world, or all of those things are equally important, right? Mm. And so if you look at even like corporate employees, this is kind of a long-winded answer, but there's a lot to it. If you look at corporate employees, a lot of them wish that they had a better like work life, like the culture, the community, the culture in their work was better. And where does that come from? That trickles down from the leadership.
Yeah.
So the leadership can only lead and create a culture to the extent of their capacity to manage themselves. So the biggest impact that I can make on the world as a whole is by helping the leaders be better leaders, be more confident in themselves, so that they can then lead their teams, so that the teams can then create a product, so that the consumers benefit, so that the economy benefits. Like, it's this huge purpose, and it comes back to people deserve to be able to be their best self, regardless of what their experience has been up to this point. If they want to be confident in their own skin and confident in their own decisions and build that empire, I'm here for it. How can I support that?
I love that. It is one of those things where you can have very broad impact on a lot of people, because if you're coaching up the CEO and they're able to be better than everyone that works for the company and then their families, and then everyone is affected by the work that you do with the executive. So I do want to ask you about burnout, though.
Yes.
You did a post about it. You said burnout equals a clear sign that your belief system is working against you. And mm-hmm. I want to say, how so? How so? Burnout is tough. I've experienced it myself before. And I know there's varying degrees. And we've done a previous episode with a burnout coach that... Mm-hmm. He experienced it pretty bad, and I'll share that episode in the show notes, you guys. But I would like for you to elaborate on how it's a clear sign that your belief system is working against you. How so?
Yeah, so there's a lot to this. So buckle up.
Ready.
There is a belief, especially in the Western culture today, that working harder equals more valuable. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking. Now, this is not the rule. There are those who understand, you know, how leverage works and that they can actually get more done by delegating more efficiently. But there is still a very pervasive I have to do more to be more. I have to do more to get more. I have to prove that I'm worthy of this. And so I have to give and give and give and give. But the problem is that it's not a matter of quantity. It's a matter of quality. Because a lot of times when people are working that hard, they're sacrificing sleep. They're not doing like the self-care stuff that would help them maintain a balance. I think there was another post that we both commented on that was talking about how someone had acquired a business and they were 2 years in and they're like, you know, I'm just working all the time and I'm burnt out. I didn't know that this was going to be harder than a 9-to-5.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, but that is a belief that the only way that this can be done is if I'm the one who does all of the work. Now, I'm not saying that they don't need to be the leader, and I'm not saying that there's not benefit in working hard. But what I am saying is if you believe that you are the only one who can do all of the things, there's no way that you can avoid burnout because humans weren't designed to operate that way.
Yeah.
And if you're not making sure that you prioritize your rest, your active recovery, which is like there are two different types of ways that your brain can take a break. One of them is by doing things that take it out of flow, that take it out of optimal functioning, things like TV, mindlessly scrolling social media. We already know that those things are like quick, easy dopamine, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there are other things that you can do, like going for a walk or taking a cold shower or yoga or things like this that are called active recovery. And what they do is they keep your brain kind of in that optimized productivity mode so that when you get back to work, you're not taking 15 to 20 to 30 minutes just to even get started before you can get anything done. So what you're able to do is, this is something that like flow coaches and performance coaches talk about a lot of times, is if you're working 6 hours a day, but you're getting 18 hours worth of stuff done, then you have more time to actually do things that you enjoy. And doing those things that you enjoy allows you to get more done when you're actually working because there's a container. Because if that container breaks, right? And a lot, you see this in a lot of startup founders, you see this in a lot of, you know, if they're in the, you know, immediate post acquisition, like within the first 3 years post acquisition, but specifically in the first 18 to 24 months. They want to go all in on the thing that they're doing.
Right.
Which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But going all in doesn't mean that you have to be working or on call 24/7. It means that you have to understand how to get the most productivity, how to move the needle in a way that allows you to still be balanced, or you're going to burn.
Where were you about 11 years ago when I had this conversation? Where were you? I was that startup founder. And it wasn't, I think the thing with startups, because I do, you know, I'm a consultant for them. And I always tell them, listen, I am not your coach. If you need like a business coach, that's something completely different. I'm into like how we execute on
getting,
like, you know, so I always, you know, I understand how they feel as if, well, I don't have money for that. Like, I'm the only one that can do it because I don't require to be paid to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And in reality, you have to figure out other ways to get things done that doesn't rely upon you working, you know, 23 hours a day, because business is not going to go anywhere if you're not here anyway. So,
right. And a lot of them don't even question, like, does this even need to be done in order to get the outcome that I want?
Yep. Yep. That objective insight that you provide, in addition to the proper type of subconscious programming, I guess I would call it, is critical. It's critical.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I'm glad we had this episode about it, because I know that folks have even more questions especially once this episode airs, I do want to have you back on just to answer some of those questions, if you'd be open to it.
Absolutely.
I think it will be worth exploring more. I wanted to ask you, though, before we kind of start wrapping up here, how much time does it take for someone to, I guess, unravel those unhelpful, unproductive beliefs that they have in order to start moving in the right direction? How much time does this take?
Sometimes as little as 15 to 30 minutes, honestly.
Like per topic, less
per issue. Yeah. Per like, issue. So a single issue can be resolved in one single session, depending on its strength and kind of like how deeply rooted it is. Mm-hmm. But those that I've worked with over like an extended period of time, and I usually just do, you know, 60 to 90 minutes one time a week with my ongoing coaching clients. When we resolve one problem, they uncover other problems. So unraveling that whole like domino chain of problems that they didn't even know were there, it's just micro shifts. It's just micro shifts here and there, right?
Yeah.
But the performance that they get, like, for example, of one of my new coaching clients that came on, in her second session, we were able to shift her beliefs enough that she landed a $50 million equity deal. Like, so
incredible.
Is 1 or 2 hours of your time worth that? Mm-hmm. You know, other clients that I've worked with, they have doubled or tripled their cash flow, not top line revenue, but their cash flow while working half the amount of hours. That's just belief system, right?
Yeah.
That you can have that kind of a thing. And I want to talk about it on this topic real quick. I just want to address the concept that I find to be pervasively toxic, mm-hmm. which is fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
Fake it till you make it reinforces imposter syndrome because you know that that's not you. But if you just change that to acting as if, which sounds like the same thing, but it isn't. It's saying, I may not be this type of CEO yet, but if I were that person, what would I do? Right? If I were that top level CEO, if I'd already acquired this business, how would I approach this decision? 100% game changer.
Yeah. Language is powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sitting here in awe of of some of the things you've shared, because I'm looking at my desk, which is an absolute mess right now. Mm-hmm. And just from this conversation, it's a few things that I'm already like, all right, I'm going to frame this problem differently.
People don't understand like how some things that are not related to business at all have an impact on how they're doing business. So like sometimes the answer to it, just as you said, messy desk, sometimes the answer to the problem isn't working hard on the problem. It's going and giving yourself 15 minutes to straighten up your desk because you're not realizing how much that's distracting you from being able to focus on the problem.
Yep.
If you give yourself a break, then your brain solves the problem without you.
Mm-hmm. Guilty as charged, Becky. Guilty as charged. Well, where can folks find you online? What's the best way for them to reach out to you if they'd like to learn more or even work with you?
The best way is through my website, which is smbsimplified.com. Making things simple so you can run your business more effectively. And then also just through LinkedIn, if you search Becky Darlin, I'm pretty sure I'm the only one, but my first name is B-E-K-I. But yeah, those are probably the best places to reach out to me.
Okay. That will all be in the show notes. And I want to thank you for joining us today and sharing your expertise on this topic. Thanks again.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a delight to speak with you. I'm like so stoked anytime we get to have a little chat, because it seems like there's always like golden nuggets in it, which makes me very happy.
Yeah, likewise. You know, I learn from every guest that's on. And so I really appreciate you sharing with me today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Unpolished MBA podcast. To hear more episodes or to request to become a guest, please visit unpolishedmba.com.